Oh yes, here we go, and it has been a rousting. I mean, anyway, we are going to talk about cobia. Fish and Frank here, setting in for Vinny's Mad World of Fishing, and we've got three people in. We've got Vinny. We've got Captain Carl and Captain Andrew, and the topic of the day is cobia. Now, should cobia start insulting other fish to become top in the...
in the fish race?
He was looking at you on that.
The fish race. Should cobia start insulting the other fish in the fish race, or should they just lie? Oh, life is so much fun.
It's a political kind All of right.
Frank is opening the door.
No. We're not going to talk politics. As much fun as it would be. I got to tell you, it's better than watching NCIS. So, anyway, coming back into the race for the fish, the PGI Fishing Club, which Vinny happens to be president of, has a Fish of the Month thing. What's that about, Vin?
Well, every month we have a species that we set up as the fish of the month, and most of the members go out competing to catch the largest fish, and this month it happens to be cobia.
Okay, and there's a lot at stake, like a $15
gift certificate. Oh, it's big bucks. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a $35 Fish and Frank gift certificate, potentially.
And, you know, this is a prize to be fought over and argued with. So, we are looking at a contest over cobia, which has already started.
Yes.
It started 3 days ago. So, we're kind of coming in on the middle of this race to the cobia. And... Well, we've got our panel here. Let's start with Captain Carl. What's your opinion of cobia?
Well, what's winning so far, Vinny?
There actually has been, for this month, no cobia submitted yet.
Hmm. Okay, so what's your thoughts on cobia? What do you think of them as a fish?
I mean, they're great, fun fish. I mean, they're strong. They're tough to catch. I mean, but they're fun fish once you hook up to them, and they're great eating. I like them.
Now, Andrew, by your own admission earlier, what's your thoughts on cobia? Because you've said you haven't actually gone out and caught a cobia yet. You're like a couple of the other guys who kind of like cobia dreams. What do you think of cobia as a fish?
Well, to me, it's a very sought-after fish, mainly because the main reason I've never caught one. I've been on the boat when people caught them. I've told people how to catch them. They've gone out and caught them. I've gone fishing with a friend of mine. Didn't catch anything. Next day, he went by himself and caught them. So now I'm just bent on catching one.
So for you, it's a bucket list. I have to work this out.
Yep.
Vinny, your thoughts on cobia?
Well, you know, I catch them anytime I go out to try.
Thanks,
oh, it's really getting deep.
Oh, actually, I don't feel bad about sabotaging your drink earlier now.
Actually,
putting salt in his soda.
No, I melted the straw.
I have never caught a cobia because I targeted it. It's always been a bycatch.
So, you've caught him. What do you think of it? Do you enjoy the fight? What is it about the cobia that makes it attractive?
Well, number one, it's great table fare. I mean, it's good. It's probably one of the finest fish you're going to eat in the harbor or out in the Gulf. I mean, it's top notch. So one, it's a good reward if you eat fish, and secondly, it's a great fight. I mean, it jumps, it runs, when you get it near the boat, you think you're about to put it in a net. It takes off again, goes under the boat, circles the boat. It's just a great fight.
Okay, now I'm going to weigh in on something. I'm a big proponent of having a fish dinner that you have caught, cleaned it yourself, cooked it yourself, every step of the way. You should do it yourself. I've always been a big proponent. If you have a little blood on your hands, you're living cleaner and better than somebody who says, well, you know, you should just go and buy this at the grocery store where no animals were hurt and it was made right there. You know, the big thing about it is fish is healthy. I mean, it's really a healthy fish, or a healthy food, the omega vitamins and all that. But when you do it yourself, there's no waste. and it's respect for the environment, respect for the fish, and we all have to, you know, sacrifice something for our own existence, but to
also
do it
gives you a set of sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, an accomplishment, and to know that you didn't kill 15 other fish so that you could have that one meal, the one fish sacrificed, and you know, you were able to do it as cleanly as possible. Yeah. And that's, to me, I don't like seeing things wasted, so I like doing it myself.
Kind of the same principle as hunting.
Yeah, I want to know that what I ate was, you know, taken care of and handled properly, cooked properly. And let's face it, in today's world, there is so much stuff going on where you don't really know who's handling your food or where it's coming from. And I like that aspect, that I know where it's coming from because I caught it. I know the water I caught it in. You know what I mean?
You caught it, yeah. You cleaned it, you ate it.
Yeah, that to me is one of the best things about that for people who are kind of, oh, I don't want to eat fish dinners, but go to a restaurant and eat fish, you know, because they don't want to get their hands messy. So I think getting your hands messy actually keeps you cleaner. So we're going to go back on to Cobia here because I tend to rant, and that's just not good. All right. coming back around, Carl, you've been a captain for quite a while, and one of the things you dearly enjoy is getting cobia.
Yeah.
How much time would you spend on a charter going after cobia?
I mean, there's different ways that I go about it. Say, like, if I'm over by, like, the Alligator Creek Reef, I'm going to do a lot of trolling over there. I'll troll big storm paddle tails, like the bunker color. And I also like to troll the big savage swim bait. That works great out there, especially this time of year, because, I mean, if you troll over there, you can catch a big variety of different kind of fish over there right now.
Okay. Now, Vinny, how long would you, like, say you're going to go out on a fishing trip, how long do you spend looking for cobia? Like, say if you're going to be out for 5 hours, would you spend a half hour, 15 minutes, an hour? What would you take time out of, like, a regular fishing day to look for cobia?
Well, like I've said, every cobia that I've ever caught has been caught while I was fishing for tarpon or fishing for shark or just drifting.
So your thought is that you don't really want to put any time in actually looking for the cobia because it's kind of like, well, sometimes it's better just to be surprised and you're fishing for some other fish and get that happy moment.
That's how it's been happening for me. We're just fishing over a reef, say Cape Hayes Reef, Danger Reef, or the Alligator Creek Reef in the harbor, and we'll by chance get a cobia hookup.
So now, Carl, you're out, and it's a different scenario. People have hired you to take you out for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. You've got, let's say 6 hours. And you're going to try, you want them to catch a lot of fish, but really have that, you know, very unique experience of hooking up to a cobia. How much time in your mind should you allot to that out of a 6 hour trip? Half hour, hour?
I mean, that really depends on what's really going on. Like, if I'm seeing, like, a lot of activity and bait in the area, I'm going to work it a little bit harder. You know, I'll spend an hour on it. But if I'm not seeing any life at all, nothing's moving, nothing's going on, I might spend up to a half hour, you know, and then I'll go move, try another spot, and I'll check there a half hour to an hour. And
so your basic guideline is it's definitely worth putting that half hour into.
Yes.
And then if you've got good signs, go on
because,
from there.
Because cobia, they're not ones really to show themselves. Like tarpon, they come up and roll all the time. You know, snook, redfish, you can see them in the flats. But cobia, you know, they sit down. Sometimes they do come up and cruise the surface. You could get lucky sometimes to see them doing that. I mean, I've only seen them do that a few times, but I mean, you do have to spend some time if you do want to target
them. It's got to be dead calm.
Yes.
I mean, very, very calm, nice and sunny, and then actually you can see their fins coming out of the water. Mm-hmm. You'll see the dorsal on the top of their tail coming across the water, but it's very rare sight.
Yep.
Very rare.
So, I mean, you have to spend some time. You know, I usually spend a half hour to hour in every spot that I go check for cobia.
Okay. Now, Andrew, you've been out trying to catch cobia. What's your experience? Now, it's a different scenario because you're on the hunt for them. So how much time do you allot to this?
Well, at this point, I'm willing to take a tent down the end of Port Charlotte Beach Complex and start a campfire and dedicate a weekend to it. But, I mean, now it's to the point where it's me against the cobia. It's not something that's, oh, cool, well, there's a chance of catching it. Now it's to the point where I'm willing to take my day and spend it solely pursuing a cobia. I mean, some of the high traffic areas, just snake it out. Wait.
Here's the difference. Vinny's like, eh, I love catching them, but I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do, and I've been lucky doing it. So I get my cobia by actually kind of like pretending they're not there, and I think it's the watch, like saying, you know, a watch pot never boils. So if the more I hunt for them, the less I find them. The less I hunt for them, the more I find them. And Carl is actively pursuing him, trolling and going out in the charters, trying to get his people there. And Andrew, who's willing to make it a lifestyle, he's going to move in. You know, he's taking the TV, the chair, he's putting it on the boat, and this is where he's going
to
be.
Yeah. Now, the same instance happened to me with triple tail. Triple tail is one of the other species in the harbor that I've never caught before, and I just find it interesting. There's something pushing you to go out and
find
I want to catch this fish, and it just so happened that we weren't targeting that fish.
That brings up a great, great point. Here you've got the PGI Fishing Club with their Fish of the Month, and Vinny, do you think this actually entices people to learn more about this fish and actually go after them by having it as the Fish of the Month?
I absolutely do. And, you know, we will bring guides in every month to talk about that particular species. So we're going to have a guide come in next week and talk specifically on catching cobia.
And one of the things that I've always found, it really helps to know more about the cobia. The more you know about it, the more you understand your prey, the more likely you are to catch it. I mean, because if you're looking for a cobia under the mangroves, it's probably not going to work very well. You know what I mean? So you have to understand the fish more. Carl, what are a couple of the habits that a fish like cobia has?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to be anchored up fishing like around 41 Bridge, Ojibwe Bridge, or a reef or something, I'm going to have my baits out there. I'll have one up, one down, but I always have one on right underneath the boat, like 4 or 5 feet underneath the boat. They like shade. They like to follow big things.
All right. Vinny, your thoughts. Are you doing anything different in preparation? Because you're going to have to go out and target this fish if you want to maintain this angler.
I
could lose master angler over this fish. You know, there's a lot of pressure on this.
Maybe I should hire Carl. No, what you know, when we're out fishing, we do the same thing. I'll always have a bait just under the boat, you know, like 3 to 4 feet, whether it be a shrimp or a piece of cut ladyfish or something, but there'll be some bait under the boat. And then we'll also have lines on bobber or balloons, you know, outside the boat, and we'll also have something on bottom.
Andrew, what techniques have you tried?
I've tried a variety from dragging artificials to sitting in high traffic areas where the cobia are known to go back and forth. And
what do you think? What about the rods? Are you setting up similar to these guys?
I'm running heavier stuff, and if I'm taking rods out with me and the thought of going for cobia, I'm keeping, you know, bigger reels.
No.
What are you talking
about? How are you putting your rods out when you get there?
I'm sending a live bait out. Whiting, sugar trout, small live bait fish. I'm just sending
free
it out.
Line free line on a bobber? Just free line?
Yep, I'm letting that bait
whiting
swim
live on the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, now here you got two other guys. This could be one of the reasons here.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons I'm kind of going back and forth.
Yeah.
Both Vinny and Carl have the exact same thing about catching cobia, which is putting that line in the rod holder, letting it go immediately down next to the boat, about 2 to 4 feet below whatever you figure the bottom of your boat is. So if your boat drafts 18 inches of water, you want that bait down about 2 to 3 feet so that it's just below there, because the cobia, when it's bright and sunny out, will look for the shade. And Carl pointed out they like following big stuff. I mean, and big things tend to leave scraps and stuff, and cobia just as easily eat scraps as they would hunt and kill bait. So maybe that's one of the key things about fishing for cobia. You've got to have that one right underneath the boat.
Yeah.
Or right next to the boat, underneath the keel line.
You know, I don't know if Carl does this, but something that I do is, if you have a cobia on, and let's say it's a smaller cobia that you don't necessarily want to keep, or no trophy or anything, but you got a cobia on and you get it near the boat, a lot of times you'll have another cobia tailing it. And so we'll always have a rod rigged that we can quickly throw a jig, throw a shrimp, or throw some kind of lure down at the one that's trailing the one that you got on.
Yeah,
so
right.
Similar to catching mahi-mahi or dolphin.
Excellent point. And Carl, your top three things that you should have on the rod rigged up ready to cast a tarpon?
A power bait, a storm paddle to a savage swim bait, and then like a worm, like a big 8-inch culprit bass worm.
On a jig head or with a worm hook?
I like the jig head.
It give you a little
just
more
to give me a little
stuff?
Bit of weight, you know, because your eels, they naturally live on the bottom, so not up there, there's not going to be a lot of them up on the surface, so I'm going to try to get it to go down. I want my imitation of an eel to go down.
All right, Vinny, your top three.
I'll have a worm on a jig head, or a DOA shrimp, or a live shrimp rigged, ready to throw at it.
Andrew, what advice have you given people, and which ones have worked? Top three.
The biggest ones, as far as giving people information in regards to going out there and targeting them, is always, like Carl said, an eel. I mean, that's part of their diet. It's a lot of people hear about that when they read articles or something. It's
okay. Number two,
just a big swim bait that's going to imitate a finger mullet or a big bait fish, something like Carl was saying, the storms.
And number three,
actually, I've told them to throw spoons, you know, a heavy enough spoon, something flashy.
That shocked me. Yeah. I was like, you know, and I shouldn't be shocked. And let's say I'm not shocked. Let's say it surprised me. Okay, I'll get my verbiage correct here, but I would have. Literally, we've got two guys who are very, very good at catching cobia, you know, admittedly different methods and everything, but neither one of them picked a spoon. I would have thought spoon would have been in everybody's bucket list, but the one more common was the bass worm with the jig head on it.
Crab's been working very good lately.
Okay.
The only reason why I know that is because here a couple weeks ago I was catching them, and every cobia I caught was regurgitating crabs. So I got the hint to put on a crab, and we started catching them.
Well, you know, what was it? Several months ago, Carl and I were out fishing for redfish.
Yeah.
And
knee-deep
Carl
water.
Saw a gold spoon and hooked up a cobia.
In knee-deep water.
Knee-deep water.
You never
in
know.
The grass flats.
You never know. Go back to how are you rigging a crab for cobia? What's that about?
I was on a charter, and we caught one, and he just regurgitated a bunch of crabs. And then one of the ladies that was with me, I actually took a crab, cut it in half like I would for redfish, and I threw it out there on a split shot, so it was on the bottom. The other one I threw out there 4 feet underneath the bobber and just let him do his thing like I would be tarpon fishing.
Which one got hit?
They both did.
They both did?
Yeah, we ended up getting four more that way.
Cobias?
Yep.
It was there that was, a better average on bottom or top, or about the same?
It was about the same. The bigger ones came off the bottom. The bigger cobia, they came from the deeper water.
Frank, I got a question for the big captain.
Andrew, prepare yourself.
Either one of you guys. If you were to go out to, say, one of the nearshore reefs or any of the reefs in the harbor, would you chum?
Yes.
Yeah.
For cobia?
Yes.
Without a doubt, because you're chumming already.
Always.
Most of the time when you're going out there targeting your bottom species, your grouper, your snapper, I mean... And that's one of the experiences I've had a lot with cobia, not catching them, but being on the boat and watching people catch them, is we're always sending a bait out below either a balloon or a bobber, because a lot of the time you'll get them cruising up, coming into the chum slick.
It's like Steve. Steve goes out there shark fishing. He's always chumming.
Yep.
He sees cobia all day long. He can't
coming
catch them.
Coming up the slick.
Yeah, he can't catch them, but he sees them all day long in a slick. I always chum. For almost any species.
All right. Excellent point, Vinny. And I think the point to be made here at the table is, what do you use? Do you chum for them, Vinny?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you use for chum?
I'll buy one of our frozen blocks.
Okay. Carl, what do you use for
frozen
chum?
Blocks?
Andrew?
The frozen block, but I'm always going to use the fine ground, because you get a bigger slick and it breaks down and spreads out and disperses in the water a lot
You can
quicker.
Tell the one of us with the most money. We're, me included. I'm using the one in the bag that's, you know, several dollars less.
$5.95, Frank.
Yeah.
$5.95.
Yeah.
Rocks. You know? I'm trying to up my advantage. At this point, I'm ready to resort to hand-to-hand combat and just jump in and fight him into the boat. So.
Don't
I'm willing to
bad.
Spend the extra coin.
We did have a captain who spent years, literally years, and his customers caught fish, his family caught fish, or caught cobia, and everybody around him caught a cobia, but every time he'd throw a light out, everything went wrong. He just could not do it. And finally, one of the pictures I ever saw was him with the cobia hanging off of his T-top and him hugging it and kissing it that it was.
Was that Kale?
Yeah, that was Kale.
That was the day he took me and my mom out tarpon fishing. He went out to get bait by himself, got out to the marker, cobia everywhere. He was hunting for an artificial crab to throw at him.
Yeah, but he was. That was the funniest picture I ever saw. Was Captain Kale with that? It was.
I remember.
I have to say, a fish manse. I mean, you've heard about bromance and romance and all that, but that was a fish manse.
And for our first fish, that was a good fish.
That was a big one. Yeah,
that was a good one.
So you're not alone in this.
Yep.
I actually spent quite a while trying to find a triple tail and ended up becoming obsessed and actually ended up getting really, really good at
it. It was an accidental catch.
You know.
Yep. Just wasn't expecting it, saw him and said, ooh.
Free line shrimp.
But now, here's the point, going back to Vinny's, and I like the accidental thing because it's accidental on purpose. Understanding the fish, knowing what to do when you see them, what to do when you hook them up and all that, plays into big, because you're saying you get them accidentally, but there's 100 people accidentally will hook a cobia or see a cobia or whatever, but don't get them, and you are landing them, Vinny. What advice would you give for that accidental bite? What do you have to be ready for?
Well, number one, they fight really hard, so I mean they're gonna tear out, they're gonna take off pretty fast, or they're gonna come running straight at the boat.
I think you've probably seen this more than I have, Carl, because you've been on the water a lot more recently. But what I remember about cobia, the main thing was when I hooked him the first time, I'm fighting him, I'm bringing him, and I'm getting him, and he comes up to the boat. And that first time up to the boat is where 80% of the people lose that cobia because they think they have him.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's not done.
Well, he didn't even get started at that point.
He didn't even realize he was hooked.
I know. Rule number one that I use is if I know I got a cobia on, don't get in a hurry to get him to the boat.
Especially the first time. My first number one rule is when I'm bringing in a cobia, then he's coming towards the boat that first time, back the drag off.
Mm-hmm.
Because once he sees the boat, let's say all of us are walking down the street and something weird starts happening to you and you're like, oh, I don't know what the heck's going on. This is not right. Then you see an alien spaceship with, putting a rope down towards you. You know what I mean? Now the fight starts. You know what I mean? This alien monster is coming to get me. And when they see the boat, that's what happens. Yep. So they all butt. That, to me, is when the fight actually starts.
That's when most of them get lost.
So, I mean, that's when they're going to wrap the anchor rope. They're going to... Yeah.
Everything. And then, I would say, if they can keep the fish on after that panic burst, that lunge, the next number one way to lose a cobia is getting impatient, because that fish will hang out there 25 feet off the boat
circle,
and he'll come in a few feet and you think you got him and he goes right back out to that 25 feet, and they can do that for
they're great stamina.
It's amazing. 40 minutes is nothing for them to just hang out right there, and you can't figure out. They don't run away. They don't come at you. And every time they come in a little bit, they go right back out. That's when you make the mistakes. What do you think, Vinny?
Yeah. And like I said, if you know it's a cobia, take your time. You know, don't rush him to the boat. And I'll tell you a little story. Darlene and I were out fishing one time, and actually we were fishing for cobia because we had found a spot where we'd had some success before. We had the anchor rope down, and Darlene hooked up a keeper cobia, and had been fighting it for quite a while because she uses lighter tackle, monofilament line, and so the fight had been on for quite a while. Got it near the boat, and it wrapped the anchor rope. And when it got near the boat, and we thought we were doomed. I ended up pulling up the anchor rope slowly. The fish was still on it, and because there was enough give in the rope, it couldn't snap the line. We ended up pulling the anchor rope up until we got to the wrap that had been wrapped five times and put the cobia in a net, threw it in the boat.
Really?
Yeah.
And
it was a good cobia. Now, you're going to say, Vinny, you dummy, why didn't you pull up the anchor rope? I don't know.
I don't always pull the anchor
rope. I just have a ball tied to it, a crab trap ball tied to it.
Yeah, but I do too. I didn't pop
I only do that if the fish is so big I got to chase them. you know, I anchor, as you said, the smart person always does not, never ties their anchor line to the boat. They put buoys on it, they put a loop on it, and they just loop it over a cleat. That way, if you do get something and you've got 150 yards and you're up to 125 yards is gone, you throw that over the side and you can go follow that fish and keep up to them. And the buoys float your line until you come back to find them. That's why I never use a single crab trap buoy.
Yes.
I'll use a crab trap buoy and a milk jug, a crab trap buoy and maybe two. But sometimes I'm fishing where there's a lot of other crab trap buoys. It might take you an hour to figure out which one is your anchor and which one's not a crab trap, you know?
Yeah.
So I do something to make it more obvious that it was my anchor line I'm coming back to get. But I see people lose that. Now, the most fun thing and about catching a cobia, you know, you've got them hooked, you know, you've drifted your bait out, you've had bobber lines, bottom lines, all this, and you got him back to the boat. He did his panic power lunge and he goes screaming away, comes back and he hangs out outside the boat and he's doing this I'm gonna wait you out thing. I'm not gonna take up all my energy fighting and swimming and running. I'm just gonna see if you can make a mistake. And so you were patient, you kept steady pressure, finally you get him up next to the boat, and then you take the landing net out. And this is where the fun comes in. I don't know what it is about a cobia. The front of their face or their gills, it's got to be like knife edges. And I've felt them, and it's not. But how else do they go right through the mesh?
Through it.
Okay, how many people here have watched a cobia go right through the mesh of their landing net?
Yep.
Me and Carl. No, Vinny?
No.
You've got them?
I've seen them landing net.
Have you done it with a landing net or with a gaff?
Landing net every time.
I've seen them go through a cast net too, a marker too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
They've cost me hundreds of dollars with cast nets. Just poof, big hole right through it.
No chance.
Tore it up. Just tore it up. Andrew, landing net, gaff.
Most of the time, it's a gaff. When I've seen them come in the boat, when I've been there and watched them land the fish, it was on offshore trips and they're gaffing them.
Okay, so
I'm not confident enough in knowing that I got the right size cobia, so I don't stick them.
Gotcha. Unless it's excessive.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, close to 50 inches, you pretty much know. And then at that point, you got to decide, is this dinner or is this CNR catch and release? And then it determines net, gaff, you know, whatever you're going to do. So, good point, Vinny. If you're not sure what it is, don't put a gaff in it.
Nope.
Okay, so we actually have someone here who thinks. What the heck are you doing with us?
Yeah.
What brought you
you're
into this group?
You're a bait shopper.
I'll stop. You know,
I'm sorry, man.
Making us look bad.
You know, we're sitting here.
I got smoke coming out of my ears.
I don't know how we got somebody in this group that thinks. All right.
Well, Andrew did seal my straw earlier today, so.
Anyway, we've talked about cobia. They do migrate. They're migratory fish. Pelagic, I guess, would be the correct term. A cobia can go from here, and I'm probably mistaken, because as everybody's pointing out, everything I say lately is wrong. But I don't see why a cobia that came by us wouldn't end up in Japan. I mean, they go everywhere.
Good possibility.
They're nonstop swimmers. They swim 24/7. Part of their brain sleeps while the other part is awake just enough to swim. They keep and they grow fast. Next to mahi-mahi, they're one of the fastest growing, most prolific fish in the water. And they're monstrous. They're amazing fish. Great eating. And they go everywhere. But they can spawn several times a year. I think that's another thing that freaks you out, is the thought that they can spawn many, many multiple times. And you see them on the reefs going in big circles. Now, people tell me that is a spawning action, that they're kind of getting in. And I don't know. Thoughts?
I have no idea on that one.
Okay.
I do. 100%.
You stumped us.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you know the answer to that?
Hey,
Smarty. There it is.
Mr. Smarty.
I don't know.
Oh.
Come on, you're supposed to be the reader thinker here. You're supposed to bail me out of this one. But yeah, it is true.
I've actually got a question, though, for this honorable panel. In years past, you used to see a lot of people fishing the 41 Bridge, catching cobia. And frankly, I haven't seen a lot of people fishing off the bridge lately. And
half the bridge is illegal to fish now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I recognize that.
If you're on the Punta Gorda side of the bridge fishing, it is not legal to do that. You can legally fish from the middle of the bridge to Port Charlotte, but from the middle of the bridge to Punta Gorda, they pass an ordinance against it.
Yeah, but I'm still not seeing a lot of people on the Port Charlotte side fishing. So I'm just curious, are there any reports of cobia around 41?
And I know why, but let's go ahead. You guys field that question, then we'll go into more why.
I mean, I do know a buddy that goes up there and kayaks. He's been seeing them up there. I haven't been hearing a lot of reports about them up there. Could be not enough bait or food source.
I think it could be playing into the fact that we've had this weird winter the way it was with as much rain as we had. You know, Carl was saying something about food. That may have pushed the food a little bit further south and hasn't driven them further enough up in the harbor to get to the bridge yet.
Nail on the head. This has been the craziest winter season, quote, slash winter season. In December, we have 80-degree water. January, everything goes cold, goes rainy. More rain than we've had ever in January since 1936, I think, was the only year we did not have, that we had more rain than this year. And that changed everything. So this year is not going to be normal. There's no patterns that are going to apply. We're seeing it with the tarpon. Last week, they were kind of going along the bridges, and somebody clicked the switch, and they all moved into the intercoastal. All the fish that were cruising the bridges, probably 80-90% of them, are now in the intercoastal. And, I mean, what drives this, okay, I want to be in the beach now, okay, I'm going to the intercoastal. It can't be a change of scenery, you know. So it's El Nino, and we're blaming El Nino. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. I don't care what you guys say. It is El Nino is the blame, and I actually think it's true. Thought?
Yeah.
Vinny? Carl?
Probably got a very good big part to do with it. You know, more rain, so it's keeping the bait out.
But that's exactly what it is. You say, well, it's a lack of food, and too much fresh water coming down the river is going to cause a lack of food. Yeah. They're going to push into it, but then try and get out of it as well.
Yeah. Fish are going to fall in the kitchen.
Carl said it. I mean, we've got a lot less bait in the harbor right now than we would normally.
Yeah, and I think that had to do with the weather, how much rain we've had, all the other stuff. Now, the good news is I did check in Arcadia a couple days ago, and it was down to less than 2 feet, which means no fresh water coming at
us. Not no more.
I haven't checked. I'll go on there and look.
I'm saying after today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to say. I don't know how big the storm pattern is and how far over the state it's extending. I'll go on fishandfranks.com. I'm going to do the weather and tides button. If I get off the tarpon map here and get there we go. First thing I would want to do is check the radar. Oh, my God, it is raining from us. I didn't look today. Mm-hmm. Up all the way up past Orlando. So the entire Peace River basin, and what do they call
it's
that
a watershed
world? Watershed,
it's that? A 1250 square mile watershed, so any rain we get in that stretch is going to end up right here in our backyard.
And I think all 1000 whatever you said, yep, is getting rain right now. And checking on the Peace River, see if it's had any immediate effect on
that. Shows Jacksonville.
It's at 1.4. it just spiked back. I mean, a dramatic spike since yesterday. It's up to 1.7, so we've had about a 6-inch increase. So we'll see how much more of an increase, but we'd have to get another foot of height in Arcadia in order for it to come down to us. So they said the maximum amount, we're sitting at 223 cubic feet per second, and in 1964 it hit 2,120. So that was a lot in 1964. That's what's kind of cool to look at on some of this stuff. We're actually below average at this time of year. It's supposed to be 386, so it's only at 223. But if we can keep, if that water volume stays down, I think the fishing will increasingly get good over this next month.
Should. Yep.
But we need more salt, more water out of the Gulf, get this harbor revitalized again, you know, get all the bait up and kicking, get that bait coming in. My last question is, what about glass minnows? Is anybody hearing or seeing glass minnows?
Yes.
Yes. One good thing. Vinny?
I'm not.
Andrew?
I'm not.
Now, that's always my The glass minnows are my barometer for health of the harbor. Much more so than white bait or thread fins, because there's a lot of human activity and everything else that goes on with the white bait and thread fins, but it's much less with the glass minnows. And it is a base food for pretty much everything. Everything eats glass minnows, from tarpon to small fish to birds to everything. Glass minnows, it's like shrimp. It is the base food. And if we got one out of three seeing them, I haven't been out there, so I can't tell you. I don't get to
weigh in. I haven't been seeing a lot, but I'm starting to see, you know, pod here, pod there. I did see a lot down at Pine Island this past weekend.
Makes me feel a lot better. That means the water's changing. Yeah. Glass minnows are your barometer. You see a lot of glass minnows, whether you see thread fins, but people with nets can wipe out schools of thread fins, but they're not going to do that to the glass minnows. They're not going to intentionally cast net those. So, you know, I've seen schools of bait up here and then have a really busy weekend with a lot of fishermen, and the bait gets scared, moved off. A lot of it gets captured and used as bait. That's hence the name bait.
Mm.
So I don't rely on greenbacks, thread fins for water health, water clarity, salinity values, but I rely on the glass minnows. That's my barometer. And so you're hearing it at Pine Island.
I seen it in Pine Island. I seen two good pods on the west wall, and I seen one pod on the east wall.
Yeah, so I'm really happy to hear about that.
That was within the past week.
So that's all good. Andrew, anything we should have talked about with cobia?
Well, the one interesting thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is more of a question than a statement. Yeah, I know you won't. For all of our offshore guys that go out, a lot of people, if you've seen remoras come up with your fish, if you notice how close the color patterns on the cobia and the remora are, from my understanding, that was a lot of times you'll have the cobia hanging out with the bigger fish, and they'll blend in, act like a remora, swim like a remora, look like a remora. Is that because the sharks won't leave them alone and the cobia will benefit off of a shark kill by eating the scraps? Because they do look close if you actually look at the remoras and the cobia. And I watched the Discovery Channel or something, and they were saying that that's natural, that the cobia have developed those colors so they can hang out with those big fish without becoming a target.
All right. Now, I have a question for Carl and Vinny. Did you know he was that smart?
I would have never known that.
No.
Carl, any okay.
Starting to sound like Vinny.
Shock and awe. Shock and awe, Andrew. Okay. This is a shock and awe.
I got to surprise you every once in a while.
Okay. Anybody want to weigh in, or was that?
I mean, that sounds like a good theory. I mean, I do know they use them for the protection, like big whales and stuff. I've seen whales out in the Gulf, and I've seen a bunch of cobia following them. I don't know if they're using it for protection or they're just eating all their scraps.
Well, it makes sense that sharks don't tend to chase remoras because it's kind of a symbiotic relationship there. So if a cobia, when they're young, can look more like a remora, he has a higher survival rate. You know what I mean? And when you see a remora, your first thought is shark, big something. I've seen them attached to everything from stingrays to, you name it, grouper.
Remoras?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen them on redfish. I've seen them on almost everything.
Yeah, they just attach themselves to whatever's handy, I think. Lazy little buggers. So, your thoughts, Manny?
I've never heard of that. You know, that they're, you know, imitating a remora and they're swimming with them to be safe. You know, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, plausible.
It's, I mean, it sounds logical, and yeah, if Andrew said it, it's kind of one of those
things
true.
That, like I said, I had seen it before and thought about it, and it was very brief. They just brought up the cobia as mimicking the remoras, but when you look at it, they have the same streamlined body, almost the same color patterns, and if they could get away with hanging out next to a big fish.
I have heard and I have seen, you know, if you see skates and rays, you might very well see cobia.
All right. The one thing we did forget, because a huge amount of the PGI Fishing Club likes to go in the Gulf. They've got some big boats. They like grouper fishing, the amberjacks, the all those fish out there in the Gulf, almost as much as I think the membership fishes in the harbor. Let's go over just quickly some Gulf techniques on cobia. Anybody got a Gulf technique? Anything they use over the reefs or wrecks out there?
Anchor
for cobia?
Up and start chumming like you would be for snapper and grouper.
Are you rigging the lines? What's going on with that?
Well, I mean, as I'm sitting there, I got all this chum in the water, and I'm chumming, and I'm bottom fishing. You know, I'm catching grouper, I'm catching snapper, I'm anchored up. But then at the same time, I'm still looking straight down and just, you know, checking out underneath the boat here and there, maybe dicing up a Spanish sardine and dropping it right there and see what comes out from underneath the boat and eats it. But I still always have a rod right 4 or 5 or 6 feet under the boat.
Just because cobia like hanging out under the boat.
Just to have it there, just in case I don't see him, you know. And if I do see him under the boat, then I'm dicing up like 4 or 5, you know, Spanish sardines, and I'm dropping a couple pieces. And if I see him, he's eating them, I'm going to hook one of those pieces with a hook, and I'm going to drop them all at the same time and just let him hopefully eat the right one.
All right. Andrew, experience in the Gulf doing cobia?
Biggest thing is when everybody's going out there, they're mainly focused on bottom fishing, which is why they made the trip. So everybody's rigged up with heavy lead and line circle hooks. They're making their rigs for the snapper and the grouper to get down fast to the bottom. So one thing I would say is always keep one with just a leader and a hook, something you could add a bobber to if you want, or something you could just freeline. Just keep a heavier setup ready to go, or something with an artificial that you could throw at them if you see one cruising in the chum line.
Have you done this experience-wise?
I've seen it done.
Okay.
Personally, no, but answer. I have seen it done on
good
the
good honest before. Answer. Yeah. A lot of respect for that. I'm in your camp. It's one of the reasons I'm very, very hopeful for your future. Yeah. And as you start your charter business, I think you're going to do great. Vinny, when you're fishing out in the Gulf, what's your cobia thoughts? What's your techniques?
I'll go to any of the nearshore reefs. Even, you know, you can go further out if you like, but say go to some of the nearshore reefs, anchor up. I would use chum, you know, block of chum. I would take,
own admission, you're out there grouper fishing and snapper fishing, and you're waiting for that accidental thing. What do you have something extra ready in case the accident happens?
Yeah, I'll have out there, I'll have an eel on a rod. But I'll also take like a squirrel fish, and I'll put it out and let him swim freely, and put him in the rocket launcher. Get it out of the way in the rocket launcher, and just have it swimming. Whether
pin
it be
fish work pretty good
a king or a pinfish, but something swimming freely outside the boat. And we've caught cobia doing that.
All right. So what you're saying is that you like a live bait freeline as your accessory, your complement to your actually fishing, because. Yep. Fair to say you've got sinkers on, you've got your bottom rigs on, your snapper, grouper fishing, and so your thought for the cobia or bonus play is a free line squirrel fish, pinfish.
Yeah. And if the water and the wind is conducive, I won't put it on a balloon or a bobber or anything. I'll just let him swim freely as long as he stays away, because I'll put it up in the top rocket launcher.
See, you're much nicer than me. I used to do that, but I don't have the luck. You know, your luck is better than mine. If I do that, he's tangled in every line I have. I use a bobber stop and pick how far down I want. And it's the crappie fishing thing, the little string that you put on the line. And I'll actually, you know, 10 to 20 feet of line from the bobber to the bait, so that at least I have a general idea where he's at, because I don't trust him. The bait don't like me. I mean, given reason, look at I'm their arch enemy of bait. I am, you know, the one bait should hate the most. I mean, and so they don't cooperate.
No,
my bait will not cooperate with me.
I have every line tied up around the anchor rope.
See, I don't know how you are such one with nature that they give you that. Well, I gotta have
you obviously haven't have seen me undoing three lines all tangled together. Then,
okay, so you are human. Okay, I was beginning to think he had some special dispensation from the gods in here.
You're deep already.
Yeah, all right.
So I need to go fishing with you if I want to catch a cobia, right,
absolutely.
Vinny?
Absolutely, I'll educate you.
Oh, okay.
And I actually
the guy who hadn't caught a cobia this month.
You haven't caught a cobia. This month is 4 days.
You got this month. I got 24 years. So I mean, you know, you got me beat.
Yeah.
So I'm just sitting here thinking it's 4 days into it, Vinny. Even I'm going to give you a break for that. Now, if next week, when you haven't done the cobia, there could be some mild ribbing about it. There's a possibility. I'm not saying it's a fact.
You better go get on the boat right now.
If I call in sick next Wednesday, you know what happened.
All right. I think we've done inshore, offshore. I think we've done cobia. Anybody got anything to add?
Nope.
All right. Now, this is Fish and Frank here at the chair, and we have Vinny in the chair across from me, president of PGI Fishing Club, all-around good friend, Captain Carl in the other chair, and Captain Carl is in between boats right now. He's just having a brand new motor put on his boat, so Carl is, that's, you know, have pay attention there, Captain Andrew. You're dropping yourself. Yes. Captain Carl is available for instructional trips and fishing trips on your boat, which costs about half as much as a traditional charter would. Hey, you're not paying for the boat and all the rest of that stuff. So you can get a hold of Carl, and he will go out with you and show you these cobia tricks or the redfish or the snook, tarpon, whatever you want to learn how to do. Carl will take you into that. Captain Andrew is almost finished. He has his captain's license. And we kind of have our own little in-house training program, and he's getting ready to finalize that. So Captain Andrew will be on the water soon as a be able to hire him to take you out. Anyway, say goodbye, Vinny.
Goodbye.
Bye, Carl.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye and good luck.
All right. Click their stuff next to this show, and you can see more about them. See you, boys and girls. Bye-bye.